This is On the Ground Ipsy on 89.1 WEMU. I'm Patrick Campion, proud to be with Sarah Rigg from Concentrate Media, talking about great things happening in and around our community. And, you know, the basic 30,000-foot view of this project that we're a proud media partner of with Concentrate Media is we just recognize there wasn't enough coverage of news in Ypsilanti and Ypsilanti Township. And a lot of times the news that was getting covered was very negative in nature. If there were shootings, there were problems in the schools, there was a problem on campus at Eastern, it was bound to show up in the Detroit media or Ann Arbor media. But, you know, all the great folks in and around Ypsilanti that make this community so wonderful to live in, that are dealing with the issues our community has, because we do have issues, but, you know, we're working hard as a community to try and overcome them, they weren't getting talked about a lot. So we're so proud that Sarah's out in our community doing this good work and then bringing these stories back to us so we can talk about them with her. It's kind of a cheat mode for us here at WEMU. We're relying on Sarah to do all the hard work, and then I just get to hear myself talk for a few minutes a week, which, you know, best of both worlds. So welcome, Sarah. Good morning.
Good morning.
And what are you bringing with you? Wait, but first we got ConcentrateMedia.com.
Right.
ConcentrateA2 on Twitter.
That's right.
And then Concentrate Media on all the other social media platforms.
Right.
After a year and a half, I've got that right almost 98% of the time. And of course, you can find all of Sarah's great work and the pictures from Doug, which I'm assuming, okay, so got good pictures from Doug this week, linked at our website, which is WEMU.org. So all that out of the way, welcome, Sarah. Good morning.
Hello.
And what did you look at this week?
Well, there are several community garden or gardening programs in the Ypsilanti area that get a lot of press, but there's also quite a few little ones that don't get as much notoriety, and there's a couple that I hadn't heard of until recently, and I'm featuring them this week. So I've brought in T.C. Collins from Willow Run Acres, and Lisa Bisher from the Cooperative Orchard of Ypsilanti.
Well, T.C. and Lisa, welcome, and thank you so much. But I guess from both of you first, what I really want to know, and Lisa, I want to ask you this first, is what inspired you to get involved with a community garden? What was it that you looked at in the community and you saw, you know, it'd be great, a garden, and then, you know, we can go from there and talk about the aspects of what you do and why you do it and how you do it. But what was it that inspired you?
Well, really, I've been community gardening since my daughter was born in this area, so around 37 years.
Okay.
First with Project Grow and then with Growing Hope in Ypsilanti. But in 2011, some friends saw that there was a little piece of unbuilt property on Jefferson Street that was foreclosed, and about a dozen of us put in some money to buy that. And at first we were going to do a permaculture food forest, but actually there was very little interest in most of the folks wanted to support agriculture, urban agriculture, but didn't want to actually get their hands dirty. And so it ended up just being me and one other person for a while, for the first 2 years. And so I wanted to learn about fruit trees. So okay, I started planting them.
All right. Well, that's a good way to learn, experience by doing. Same question for you, TC. What did you look around and see that made you say, you know what, let's put a garden in Willow Run?
Well, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
For the invitation.
Yeah.
I started gardening. I learned this from my family and from my great-grandfather and great-grandmother. And I just felt that there was a need for it. And my oldest son, which is Tucker, he sat there and said, Dad, can you teach me about what Grandpa taught?
Wow.
So I said, all right, I would teach you. So I taught him the methods about picking the strawberries, planting tulips, crocuses, and it just expanded since then. And it's been 47 years now.
Wow, and that's an interesting cross-section of family tradition with community need. That's good, and I like that you're talking about passing on tools, because I think that's something we're missing out on a lot in our community is self-reliance, self-dependence, and gardening can be a big part of that. Knowing how to grow and cultivate your own food, it sounds like you're talking about to a degree there. That's a big deal. So, Lisa, let's go back to you for a minute. You mentioned you're on Jefferson. So what is your garden, and what do you do?
So our garden is the Cooperative Orchard of Ypsilanti. And
Corey.
Yeah, Corey is our nickname. It's kind of a bad acronym. But I also have an agricultural background from my childhood. So, but that was in truck gardening, as we called it, in South Jersey. So orcharding or growing fruit trees was something that I had never looked into or tried before. And we have around 26 trees on the property, all kinds of different things, some standard commercial varieties like Honeycrisp apples and Galas, but also some heirloom varieties that have disease-resistant traits to them. And then we have peaches, pears, apricots, elderberries, cornelian cherries, American persimmons, and I'm sure I'm forgetting a few things.
Well, we're in Michigan, though, and I think part of our agricultural heritage here in Michigan is fruit trees.
Absolutely.
A lot of apples, a lot of cherries. We're the cherry capital of the world in many respects. So is Michigan's climate or our area conducive to this? Is it quote-unquote easier to do what you're doing versus some other, you know, types of fruits or, you know, other things you might grow in a garden?
I don't know. I think in the years that we've been doing it, you know, we've come across some things that are easier and some that are harder. We're using all kinds of permaculture techniques, which are biomimicry. So we're mimicking how the forest keeps itself healthy.
Okay.
So we're planting trees that fix nitrogen near the fruit trees to feed them. We're using mushrooms. We're using forest floor debris and so forth. And we're trying to encourage a real natural self-sustaining.
Well, it sounds like a lot of work. I mean, this is more than just let's dig a hole and throw a tree in it and cross our fingers and hope for the best. So you're
exactly.
It sounds very natural what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're not throwing a bunch of chemicals on it to you know, help it grow or to keep insects off of it.
Right.
And you talked a little bit about when we were talking before you came in here, you talked about bees a little bit. I know that's a hot topic for so many people, encouraging a growth in the bee population. So what is the role that bees play in what you do?
So I was a beekeeper for 12 years, and we might be getting bees back at Corey. Found an urban beekeeper who might want to put some bees there, so that's exciting. What bees do is they come in, they are attracted to the nectar in the flowers, and then what they do is they go from flower to flower, and when they're walking around on the flowers, they get pollen on their feet. And so they get to the next flower, and pollen rubs off and on, and this is the sexual reproduction of trees.
You're describing tree sex.
Yes, that's what I'm describing.
Okay, so children,
all
right. Cover your ears. This is the bees portion of the birds and the bees.
Yes, and so once the flower has been pollinated, then the fruit begins to grow where
so
the flower was.
You mentioned this was almost an independent thing at the beginning, and now it looks like you're doing a co-op model.
Yes.
I'm assuming you had a lot more people involved. You know, tell me about who's involved and how are they helping, and what do you do with the fruit you grow?
So there's about a dozen people who are members. You can either work or pay to be a member, or a combination of both. We split up the fruit evenly, whatever fruit that we get. Also involved are the Kingdom Builders, which are Southside growers that are in the neighborhood. And also we work with the WSC Academy kids. They come every week, and they're learning some orcharding skills.
What
and
work
also,
do you have them do?
They do everything. They thin the fruit. They weed. Last year they planted a bunch of trap trees, which are trees that are more attractive to the Japanese beetles than our cherry trees.
Okay.
So they planted those. They've planted some herbs. So they're busy.
And so, TC, you're in Willow Run, right? Where's it at? Where's your garden at?
Well, my garden is out at, I have several gardens.
Okay.
My main garden is at Washtenaw County Farm Park off of Platte Road, and that's an outdoor garden classroom. The one I have at Chapel Business Center, which is the old Chapel Elementary School, that's an indoor-outdoor garden, and that's 7 days a week, 365 days out of the year.
I just wanted to chime in. You call it Willow Run Acre because that's where you started gardening when you were growing up, correct?
Oh, okay. All right.
Yes.
I started
gardening out in Willow Run out there off of Harvest Lane, Wyatt Road area.
So it's spread out since its beginnings. You've kind of taken on some new locations.
Yes.
Can I talk about your family heritage for a minute? You mentioned it was your great-grandparents that kind of passed down this farming knowledge. Where did that come from? Where were they from, and how did they learn farming?
Well, my ancestors were slaves.
Okay.
I'm African American,
yep.
Half Indian. And I learned the slave trade through them. And that was both in the house and back of the house. So what I mean by that is that I learned how to cultivate the land from my great-grandfather, both my great-grandfathers. And I was young at the time. I learned how to grow tobacco, cotton, yams, different varieties of okra. different plants of herbs, legal herbs. And it was very nice that I learned that, because I was just a kid at the time, and it was just a fun time for me to learn.
And it was in this part of your family's heritage too. Yes. I'm assuming, you know, being more self-sustaining, learning how to have these tools so that you can both make some money and, you know, feed your family at the same time. Yeah, go ahead.
I never made any money off this.
Okay.
I mean, I like growing this, and it's an opportunity to teach, and my reward is just to see the smile, and that's my payment, just to see someone smile of the rewards or the benefits. Even if it's a lost crop, it's still a reward, because you can still learn something from a lost crop.
So let's talk about the crops you do. You have several locations now, but what's your primary focus? What are you gardening? What are you growing?
Well, at the Washtenaw County Farm, we have four different varieties of currants. We have black currants. We have two varieties of red currants, two varieties of white currants. We have goji berries, which is very excellent. We use that for smoothies. We have boysenberries, gooseberries. We have four different varieties of...
All right, it's breakfast time, so I'm getting a little hungry here. All right, keep going, though. Keep going.
We have four different varieties of raspberries. Okay. We have a new variety of honeyberry, which is related to blueberries. We also have blueberries. We have a host of about 30 different herbs that we traditionally grow. We also have two varieties of rhubarb, two varieties of asparagus. We also have an heirloom, which is called the Egyptian onion, which is handed down from generation to generation. And we try and keep that in the family, but if someone asks for it, we don't mind giving that to them.
And you mentioned strawberries, too. So I'm thinking strawberry rhubarb pie now. But you're giving me this big list. You're talking about all these varieties and things. A lot of the things you're talking about that I didn't know there were that many varieties. How shocking is it for people that have spent most of their life in a small produce section to see that there's all these options? There's all these foods that they probably didn't even know exist.
I'm glad you said that. One of my programs that I do offer is a potato program where we teach toddlers all the way up to senior citizens how to grow their own potatoes. And I don't use the traditional white potatoes or the russet potatoes. I try and show them a variety of potatoes, such as the yellow potatoes, the pink potatoes, the red potatoes, the purple potatoes, the blue potatoes. And a lot of people have never seen those. And to see the expression of someone...
Big grayish ones from Idaho. That's what we know, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes, that's the russet potato.
Okay.
And I try and stay away from the Kepenick potatoes, because that's the traditional potato. Just seeing the expression of someone, how the potato grow. What is a potato eye? What is the potato root? How to grow this potato? And it's so interesting.
And what do they taste like? I've always been told, and I've had some experience with this from when I was a kid and growing up in an Italian family where we grew a lot in the backyard, that tomatoes just taste better, that the Swiss chard was amazing, that the herbs we grew there were just... what is the reaction people have to, you know, picking a strawberry off of, you know, and putting it in their mouth and tasting with something that's been out of the air for, you know, 30 seconds rather than sitting in a truck or frozen somewhere? How do people react to really understanding how fresh fruits and vegetables taste?
Well, for an example, since you brought up strawberries, you can buy the strawberries at your local grocery store, and those are green strawberries. They're mm-hmm. picked in the field green, and then they sit on the shelf or in a warehouse, and they're starting to ripe at that station, and then they're shipped out to us red. So we're not tasting the real sweetness of a strawberry. But when you're out in the field and the strawberries are mature and they grow on their own without any pesticides or any things of that nature, you get to pick it and you get to taste the sweet strawberry. So it is rewarding, even though you might have a little dirt on it, but dirt don't hurt.
Lisa, what's your vision for the future of Cory? Well, how do you want to see it grow? Pun intended.
Well, originally we thought that we would continue to buy foreclosed lots and, you know, have the orchard co-located on different sites. We still may do that. Right now, I would say that interacting with the neighborhood has really taken precedence, and making the orchard be an asset to the neighborhood and involving people who are in the neighborhood has been like the most teaching part of it for me, and also the most valuable part of it. We had a pruning workshop there the other day, and some neighbors turned out, pitched in. An older lady, a grandma from the neighborhood, pushed by a couple of kids in a stroller, and she said, oh, we come here all the time. You know, we wander through the orchard, and that just, that thrills me. That makes me the happiest of anything.
If people want to find you or find out more about this, how can we do that?
We have a Facebook page, and it's facebook.com/IPSEOrchard.
Okay.
And that's the same. Our email address is also IPSEOrchard@gmail.com.
Same question for you, TC. What's the future for the gardens that you're tending, and do you want to do more?
Well, my focus is that I would like to get this into full stream to the school. How should I say?
Like develop an actual curriculum around gardening and growing.
Amen. Yes, because it's very important that we go back to home economics with gardening, where kids need to learn about how to peel a potato instead of just opening up a bag of potatoes that's frozen and pour them in a pan. We got to learn the basic skills of gardening, basic skills of basic management, and try and get it like I'm doing in the preschool setting, so where kids can learn about soil composition. It's okay to make mud. It's okay to understand when leaves break down, what happens to that. When kids learn about that in the fourth grade, they're a little bit behind the eight ball with that. So if you teach it at an earlier level and give them the experience of just learning how to grow something and seeing a caterpillar come out of the chrysalis, is getting their minds to open up and to learn.
And do you do any cooking with the food that you grow? Because, I mean, my mouth's watering. I mean, I'm thinking about fruit trees, but I'm also thinking about a dozen different things I'd love to eat from all the stuff that you were listing. What do you do with it?
Well, we let the kids and the parents grow it, and then they get to take it home themselves. So okay. I'm a disabled person, so I don't do that much cooking at all. But I try to stress to anyone to learn the basics of just fresh cooking. And, I mean, it's easy to make simple vinaigrette. You got oil, you got vinegar, grow your own herbs, experiment with your own taste palette, and just grow your own vegetable and make your own salad. And that's a stepping stone.
And you mentioned that you'd given this knowledge you passed along to your son, right? What is the future past you? I mean, are you hoping, I mean, not that we want you to go anywhere. We hope you're doing this for quite a long time. But, you know, do you want to continue this on generationally? Is there somebody that's going to step up and take this over?
Yes, my youngest son, his name is Joe, and he has a seed bank.
Okay.
And we collect seeds from around the world, and he trades seeds to peers his age level. And he tried to encourage kids his age level. Like I said, he's 10. He's been doing this since he's 2 and 3, and his other brothers and sisters are doing it also. So we're trying to educate as much as we can. And I want him to do it because if something happens to me, Lord forbid it doesn't, but at least he has a footprint to go into some type of schooling in algae culture, because that's most important.
And one thing I didn't ask either of you, and TC, I'll ask you this first, is how does this get paid for?
Well, I fund it all myself, and I don't have any funding at all, and I am struggling, and I've been asking for help from the community quite a bit, but a lot of doors has been closed, and like right now, I'm having a struggle right now, because I've purchased a lot of vegetables to go into the ground, and there's an operation the north of Ann Arbor. I was promised to get some land, an acre of land, in exchange for payment, and things went sour. So I have all this produce to go into the ground that I cannot put in the ground because I have no land to put it. So I'm kind of hurt this year. This is the first time I'm going through this.
Somebody's listening right now, and they're thinking, you know what, that sounds like something I can help with. How do they get in touch with you?
They can contact me at rillarunacres.com.
Okay, good. You got a website. Beautiful. Awesome. All right, and same question for you. Lisa, who funds what you do at the orchard?
We do have member fees.
Okay.
And
kind of a co-op model, right?
Yeah, exactly. So people pay to be a member, or there's a sliding scale, though. So some people pay, you know, $20 a year. Some people pay $150, and some people just do the work, and they become members that way.
And I want to say, just want to add note there, TC, that I know that our community is one that very strongly supports these kinds of things, connections to our past, and not letting skills like this die away as generations move forward. So I'm hopeful that, again, somebody listening right now hears this great work that you're doing and bringing this knowledge to the next generations and wants to help. And I'm encouraging people, you know, this is not a skill set that is easily acquired, and all that knowledge that's in his head, it needs to be passed along, because we need more people being enthusiastic about this in order to, you know, keep building this to the future. So, yeah, what do you?
Just wanted to touch on one thing that this year, when we originally started in the school system, we only started off with just 10 potatoes. But now this year alone, we grew 6,000 potatoes. We gave away 4,700 potatoes away to five different school districts, two different private schools, and three daycares out of 3,000 kids. So we gave a lot of potatoes away, but we still have a lot more to go through.
Thank you both for doing what you do in our community, you know, helping make it a little greener and sharing this knowledge and this information and, you know, showing people that, you know, what they can do in their own backyards. You know, we're getting their hands a little dirty, you know, especially these kids. You know, let's get them outside and show them and share this knowledge. So thank you so much for what you do in our community.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where are we going for lunch today, Sarah?
I don't know
if you're hungry after all that, but I certainly am. The mouth-watering thinking about, you know, growing up with my great-grandmother out in the backyard picking and cultivating tomatoes and zucchinis and Swiss chard and herbs and making sauce from scratch. I thought when I was little, I thought that's how all food was made. I had no idea that things like McDonald's existed. But here we are today.
Yeah. So TC was talking about the fact that he doesn't really cook with the produce that he makes. He just sends it home with the families. But one thing he does teach the kids to do with it is make soaps and
handmade
paper out of some of the herbs and flowers. So you're writing on a piece of paper and it smells like rosemary. Oh, wonderful.
And what was your, you mentioned that, but what was your other big takeaway from this week? I mean, were you sampling the wares while you were out?
No, it was a little early. I mean, I could have been maybe breaking off some garlic tops, but I really like, you know, I just really like how community-minded both of these programs are, and at Cory particularly, all the partnerships that they have going, you know, like working, you know, across planting with the Park Ridge Community Garden and so on. I just love how everybody works together and, you know, wants to help each other out. It's not a competition. It's a collaboration.
I know you're off next week because of the holiday. Right. Any big Memorial Day plans?
I'm actually going up to the UP to visit relatives before Memorial Day, but Memorial Day, I'll just be home kicking my feet out.
And I'm heading over west coast of Michigan, the east coast of Lake Michigan. We'll be on Lake Michigan this weekend. So we're hoping for sunny weather and good times because I need a little bit of refreshing that wonderful curing, healing properties of Lake Michigan washing over me. So hopefully next week we'll be in wonderful moods and the weather will be great, and then we'll circle back with you in a couple weeks
right
here.
Mm-hmm.
This is On the Ground IPSY on 89.1 WEMU. Thanks for joining us this week. You can find all the great information that we just shared on WEMU FM and HD1 Ypsilanti at our website, WEMU.org.